Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit brooklynslate.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Good morning. Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue at heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Lady Sue. And what do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? I'm eating noodle soup. Because it's faux weather. It's cold out. And I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear on my show and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brands, and startups, all those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today's in-studio guest on Hashtag People We Like, we'll welcome Jordan Salcido, beverage director of the Momofuku Group. She's also a partner in Charlie Bird Restaurant and winemaker, creator of Belus Wines. And that's not all, ladies and gents. This sommelier, restaurateur, winemaker is also a columnist with the Daily Beast, former cook, wife to fellow sommelier Robert Bohr, and a bona fide fashionista. Ha! Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Tis the season of more eating and drinking and dinner parties. My Twitter feed is filled with turkey tips and tricks, but what about the wine? This week, instead of heading to the Green Market, we'll get a Thanksgiving 101 with Jordan here with a little in-studio beverage tasting. And then after that, we'll really settle in with Jordan and talk about what's new in the Momo world and get to know women who've been influential in her life. That includes Grandma and Tori Burch. Finally, to wind it down this morning, we'll hang with Paul Greco, sommelier and creator of Hearth Restaurant and Terroir Wine Bars, and Rosemary Gray of Flatiron Wines. She's a fine wine buyer and founder of Sherry Fest. And now for Hashtag People We Like.
People We Like.
Welcome, Jordan.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for always being so fun to collaborate with and have conversations with and being very inspirational and also doing like basically 10 dream jobs.
You know, it was, I want you to introduce all, you know, you came up with the most incredible introduction. Thank you for that. But no, it's always wonderful to see you as well.
I like PRing my friends.
It's awesome. You're very good at it.
Well, if you feed me, what is this that we have here?
Okay. All right. So I was going to bring a wine, and then the more I thought about it, we are right smack in the middle of Thanksgiving week. We are 2 days away from Thanksgiving, and I've been researching what the pilgrims drank recently, and basically nobody knows for sure because there were no video documentaries, but in all likelihood, they drank cider. So I thought that we would drink some cider today.
Fun.
And there's a lot of cider out there that tastes like feet, and I don't like cider that tastes like feet. I know that people do. I am not one of those people. So
what do you mean by it tastes like feet?
Well, you know, it's like it's not sweet. So obviously there are many different kinds of apples, and the apples that we see in the farmer's market are not generally the kind of apples that are traditionally used to make cider. I guess when I say apples that are cider that taste like feet, I mean the sort of like bacterial, almost vinegar-like cider, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just mean that I prefer the cider that is, you know, a little bit more fruit-like. And so this one is by a guy named Eric Bordelais. He used to be a sommelier at the restaurant L'Arpège in Paris, and he started making cider, so he's from Normandy. He moved back to Normandy because Didier Dagenau, the late Didier Dagenau, really urged him to go back and really sort of rediscover his roots and start making the kind of cider that he wished were more prevalent. And so this is from Normandy. This is the Cidre Tendre, which is primarily apples. And it's actually from the 2012 vintage, which was really, really, really bad in Normandy. Mm-hmm. So very few ciders were made, or at least a much smaller proportion. Usually Eric makes a pear cider, the Pour Granit, and sadly there's none of that left. We used to have that at Sambar and at Ma Pesh, but there is no Pour cider in 2012, so we were drinking another one of his ciders that I love as well, the Cidre Tendre.
Mm-hmm. And for those uninitiated in cider, traditionally cider is from Normandy.
Cider is, okay, so as I have come across in some recent research, cider is actually, nobody knows exactly where cider came from. There are a couple of theories as to where apples came from. So the modern apple, the domestic cultivated apple, is believed to, there are sort of like two camps. And one of them is that this sort of native strain just naturally grows and naturally has been growing in various places around the globe, and that has sort of evolved into apples as we know them today. And the other one is that actually the main place is from sort of right on the border of Kazakhstan and China. And there is a region where the sort of the oldest ancestor of apples, that is where that came from. And then through trade routes. So the other thing I learned about apples and apple trees is that if you take an apple seed and you plant it into the ground, you will get a different kind of apple than the tree that, or than the apple that you just used to plant that
next
tree.
Whoa, that's majorly terroir.
Yeah, totally, right? So the way that you get the same kind of apple is by grafting, sort of like, or actually exactly like, grapevine. Then the sort of the practice of grafting had been going on long before even the Roman Empire. So that dates way, 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 way back, thousands of years.
So the French made a refined version of this apple that's rotting and delicious and fermenting, and we love stuff that's fermented. So, okay, so we're going to taste it and get...
And, yes.
Mm, so cheers.
Cheers.
Sniff.
It smells like apples, right? That's the best thing.
Well, unlike with grapes where you can make wine and then it could smell like just about anything.
Anything, exactly, exactly. It's so good.
It's just very friendly and welcoming.
Yes. There's another one. Let's see, Etienne Dupont makes another amazing cider, also from Normandy. And I was drinking one recently, and it was the 2005 vintage, and it was just a half bottle, and it was actually a secret Santa gift from a friend named Ryan Curran, who I used to work with at 11 Madison Park, and I lucked out, and he had pulled my name out of a hat for a secret Santa's, like, back in 2009, actually, which is, what, 4 years ago now?
Wow.
And so, yeah, I was trying this 2005 cider, and it was so pure and fresh, and it tasted like apples, and there was, you know, it's amazing how long great cider can last.
Yeah, it just sticks. It's like, it's so magical. It's in a bottle and it still tastes, it still has brightness and appliness. Very low alcohol. What's the percentage on this?
I think it's about 5.5.
Mm-hmm. So you can get eased into sort of holiday shenanigans.
Exactly. A great thing to drink while cooking. In fact, this is even less. This is 4% alcohol by volume.
This is good enough for kids.
Yeah, you can like start. See, it's 10 a.m. and this is a perfectly reasonable thing to be drinking.
Sunday was so burr cold. I'm now coming down with something and this feels like I'm eating an apple day.
Right?
A day, the doctor said.
Exactly.
So.
This is good for your health. Cider is nutritious.
So, you know, everyone talks about Thanksgiving food. Now, Thanksgiving beverages. I'm that person. I'm not afraid to cook on the plate and, you know, a couple minutes into Thanksgiving first plate, everything's all mixed up and it's just quite fine by me.
So any drink, I mean, any, you know, Zinfandel, Pinot Noir, Riesling, I mean, I would, if it were me, I would have kind of everything on the table and people can pick and choose what they want.
A smorgasbord.
A cornucopia.
A cornucopia.
Of bevs. I don't know, some, I don't know, top tips.
Oh, on pairing?
On pairing, yeah.
Okay. No, I love everything you just mentioned. I feel like it depends on what your Thanksgiving dinner looks like. If you're going with the classics, I mean, everyone says Beaujolais, but I feel like that's not a bad call because it's fruity and the tannins are low and it's not going to be offensive to any of the flavors on the table. But I guess along similar lines, also Beaujolais or Cru Beaujolais at least has some good acidity and freshness, and that like cleanses the palate that will allow you to have your bite of mashed potatoes. And then your, you know, there are all these sort of different flavors going on. And I think something with acidity is important to cleanse the palate.
And a lot of richness.
A lot of richness. I am really into sparkling things at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's...
I mean, your whole life, right? I mean, at the moment, please, don't lie.
By at the moment, I mean... At the moment,
I could use some really fine champagne.
What a good idea. Yeah, we have bubbles in our cider, but it's not quite the same as champagne. Now, I feel like the cider would be quite delicious with Thanksgiving. I think I might bring some cider to Thanksgiving this year. Yeah, champagne, I know that's not very American. There are actually two guys who are making sparkling wine that will be ready next year. It's not yet on the market, but they are making American sparkling wine in the style of Grower Champagne with help from guys like Cedric Bouchard in France. So I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they? Justin Willett of Tyler Wines. So he will have... Winslow Estate sparkling wine that we'll be able to get next year. I know this isn't very helpful right now, sorry. And then also Under the Wire, which is Morgan Twain Peterson and Chris Cottrell, and Morgan started Bedrock Vineyards, and so he is also going to be doing single vintage, single varietal sparkling, so that'll be great next year. And I think for this year, let's see, also I'm loving Frappato.
This
is like an oldie but a goodie.
And a Lambrusco along the same lines. Lambrusco is the most underrated.
I know, it's so Italian, though, that it's hard to, like, pass that by.
Does it really have to be American, though? No, I mean, I don't really care that much.
I think you're right. I'm half Italian. My entire father's side of the family is Italian. I think you're right. I think that's a really fun call. You know, something with effervescence. And really, most importantly, I mean, we all know this, so we all keep saying this, but it's the truth, which is whatever you like, you know? Whatever you enjoy drinking, that will taste the best to you on Thanksgiving.
I think so. And I love the evolution of, you know, white and lighter and sweet, then to lighter reds, and then to medium, and then sort of heavier reds, and then there's room for digestives. And so I like the whole entire spectrum because it makes
Madeira
it fun.
Actually, as you're talking, I feel like Madeira would be a good Thanksgiving.
Absolutely, with the pecan pie and
yes. Exactly, and like pumpkin pie and these maple-y flavors. So like A, it would actually go really well, and B, there's a lot of American significance to Madeira. And I think I see this a lot, but that was the drink in which the Declaration of Independence was toasted. Like,
yep. That's a fun one to share with kids.
As applicable to 4th of July as to Thanksgiving, but yes, in the spirit of Americanism. And exactly.
Okay, so I know that you and husband Robert Bohr, you are well prepared. And so you ship a case. How much wine to where are you headed?
Okay, actually, we're going to New Jersey, which is where Robert's family lives. So we will get to spend Thanksgiving with them. And actually, we would just bring some wines out with us. And then when we go to Colorado, we usually send...
Where you're from?
Where I'm from, yeah. Then we'll send out some wines in advance. And actually, they're more and more and more. And it's amazing to see how this has changed in the last several years. But I feel like it's more and more possible to get great wines all over.
Yeah.
So there's no need to ship things. But, you know, my family likes wine and they get really curious and excited about it. So
for people who are not a sommelier couple.
Yes.
And aren't so well prepared. I find that I've definitely found myself in the suburbs or some boonies and Some boonies have really nice wines, and some of them don't. And then you walk into a wine store, and don't get me wrong, I will drink just about anything. I'm pretty democratic, but you know, it's a holiday, and you want to be delicious, and some of the stuff is just not that exciting because we're not as spoiled as we are in New York City with the overabundance of incredible world-class wine stores. Yes. So how do you navigate that? Do you make like mulled wine? I mean, what would you do? Let's say you were like SOL.
Idea. Okay. All right. So I think mulled wine is a really fun idea. And this is what my mom used to make, and they were really fun. She called them happy turkeys, and I think this came from a Bon Appetit recipe from like probably the 1980s, but it was Prosecco with cranberry juice.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's like for the sophisticated palate, but it's pretty hilarious. So that's one
chop
option.
Chop a few cranberries in there.
Yeah,
exactly. For color.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You're totally on it. What else? All right. So one piece of advice that I've been giving my parents recently, because Kermit Lynch's portfolio is now available almost everywhere.
Wow.
And all of the, I really believe this, and it was fun because he was just in town and I got to meet him because he came in to dinner at Sambar.
Legendary importer. Everything, you know, you turn the bottle around, if it says Kermit Lynch, you should get it.
Yes, I believe that. And lucky for us, he has written, most of the bottles even say it on the front. So if you see a bottle and it says imported by Kermit Lynch, I think that that's a really good rule of thumb, is that wine is probably going to, that wine is made, that wine is imported for a reason, and it has his stamp of approval, and he really takes pride in the wines that he imports. And I really have so much respect for him. And that's just a really easy sort of like, okay, you're at the wine shop, you don't recognize any of these bottles, and it says Kermit Lynch's name. Usually that's a very good wine. And it's not necessarily expensive.
How about, what is the grape, the wine that is the least offensive when it's just okay? The one that's really hard to fuck up.
Oh, you mean like in general? Or
yeah, it's like, you know, you can't really, you can't really fuck up Prosecco if you're buying it to put some juice in it.
Right.
It's kind of like a couple of those.
Oh, good question. Okay. Yeah. No, you know, I mean, I think your call with mulled wine is a really, really good one, because the whole point is that you're like not making it taste like anything that it tastes like when it comes in. You're creating something new with it. And I think that that's festive and fun. And who doesn't want something warm and spiced and delicious on Thanksgiving? So that's, I think, a great call. What else? Hot toddies. And now we're getting into whiskey.
Okay, so yes, let's just. I think Jordan's standards are a little higher than mine.
No, I think Cremant is always Cremant, usually from Alsace or from the Loire. Those are like sparkling wines that are super
bubbly. That is not champagne.
Yeah, but that's made in the same style as champagne, and usually with a lot of the same integrity standards and a fraction of the price.
Too inexpensive.
Oh, Bougie Sardon. That's another one.
Which we're going to get to in a moment.
Oh, excellent.
Because you're Belus, your new Belus, right?
Yes.
So last tip for our Thanksgiving 101, Jordan and Robert travel in style.
Well, the other, okay, so this is one of Robert's really great ideas, and I totally made fun of it, and then I regretted it once we were on the airplane, but we were flying, and it was a longer flight, and he went to Duane Reade, and he bought, 9 travel Listerine bottles, or maybe it was more than that. He bought several travel Listerine bottles, and he then proceeded to like empty them into a larger Listerine bottle and rinsed out these little tiny miniature Listerine bottles. And then he poured a very nice bottle of, I think it was Rumée Amoureuse, into them. And I was completely making fun of him, and I thought this was the most ridiculous thing. And then, of course, we got on the airplane, and you know, he gets a wine glass, and he's making himself a nice glass of wine. And it was very impressive. It was extremely resourceful. So that's another tip. If you really love wine and or cider or whatever it is, and you want a nice glass of that for the airplane, there are small miniature travel size glass bottles, and you can find them in your local Duane Reade or or other drugstore. And
we don't mind the Listerine rinse before
exactly.
For Epicurean appeal.
That's why you have to get the glass, because it does not preserve the flavor of the Listerine.
Listen carefully. It has to be glass. So I'm your host, Leyte Sue, and you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can tweet at us. We've got Jordan Salcido, beverage director of Momofuku. She also makes wine, Belus wines. So that's at J Salcido, J-S-A-L-C-I-T-O, at Momofuku, that's M-O-M-O-F-U-K-U, at Belus Wines, B-E-L-L-U-S-W-I-N-E-S, and it's hashtag WOMSHOW, W-O-M-S-H-O-W, as always, at Heritage _ Radio, at Leyte Sue, L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. After this quick commercial break, we'll continue with Jordan, and stay tuned. You have me now.
You are listening to Morning by Tom Cruise on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I've done a waffle.
Fancy restaurant records.
Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. Today, we've got Jordan Salcido, beverage director for the Momofuku Group. She also makes wine, Belus Wines. She also is a partner in Charlie Bird Restaurant. She does it all. So, Jordan, you go to Momofuku's many restaurants, Noodle Bar, Sambar, Co., Mapesh, and we've got some new developments in the Momo world. So, let's announce Thunder Peach.
Thunder Peach!
Thunder Peach!
I think it's going on today, actually.
Oh my gosh, so exciting.
It's like super brand new.
So it's a superhero.
It is a superhero. All right. So it is. We are making a wine cooler, and it's actually made of wine instead of malt beverage.
Which I didn't know. I just thought wine cooler, you know, because I didn't really drink. My parents don't drink. I didn't drink wine coolers as a kid.
No, I mean, I remember drinking them like right on like the cusp of like, you know, when you start discovering that alcohol can be fun. And that was, you know, so there are all these, I think it was like a there's like raspberry. There are all these ridiculous names. There's Stoli Ice out there. There's Zima. There's all these things. But they're not made from actual wine. And so we thought it would be really fun to actually make a wine cooler out of wine and make it taste good. So within sort of the Momo lens, we are We're making it with Finger Lakes Riesling and New York State peaches. And we are, so you probably know this, but Dave Arnold at Booker Next is...
Who's also a fellow Heritage Radio host.
Is he? He's amazing, and he is obsessed with carbonation and getting it right. So we've been working together to get the carbonation right. We are bottling it. And then the name comes from Thunderbird, which was a car, but that's not where it comes from. The name comes from the wine that was produced by Ernest and Giulio Gallo that became the number one wine in America and that shot them up to the number one wine producers in America. And it was also the number one wine on Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a combination of white port and lemon juice concentrate.
Mm.
So our Thunder Peach tastes nothing like their Thunderbird, but it's a fun name to say.
The Thunder Peach right now is already starting to sound like some of my favorite childhood Asian beverages,
with
like kind of peach and lychee in
it. Yeah, totally.
Yum, yum, yum. Can't wait to go try it. It's at Sambar?
No, Booker and Dax.
Booker and Dax. Oh, okay.
Oh, which is attached.
But you can't get it at Sambar. You have to get it at Booker and Dax.
You have to get it at Booker and Dax.
Okay.
Exactly.
Booker and Dax is the Momofuku cocktail bar.
Exactly.
Okay. And then in the world of Ko, you're revamping that list. And I have so many fond memories of Ko. I got really good at putting the mouse cursor thing. Like, leave it right at the part of your computer screen where you know the clicky, where you need to click it. And that, like, actually, that millisecond makes a difference in getting a co-reservation, because not even David Chang's mother can get a co-reservation without going through that same process or having somebody nice to it.
Exactly. No, and I've tried to, like, you know, on occasion, on one occasion I went and I tried to make one for a friend and I was unable to do it because I was like right there, right at the right moment. But no, it's amazing. It's amazing how well people follow those rules and those directions. And Ko is,
one of my favorite dining experiences in New York, even though I haven't been back in a long time, but you're revamping the list.
So we revamped the pairing and we made it all sparkling wines. And we're adding some other things to the list. So we're really, because Ko's list have so many beautiful sort of lesser known varieties. And what we thought it would be important to do was also represent some of the classics. So we just put on some like 2001 Ravenau Monte de Tonnerre and some older Tempier and some beautiful old classic wines. But the pairing we've completely revamped. And we turned it into all bubbles, and it's not all champagne, so there are a couple of beers, but we've also been doing these some rinses.
Fun.
Where, like, we'll take
Moscato.
So we have one dessert, and we're rinsing the glass with Dewazakura Dewasansan sake, and because there's a sake foam in the dessert, and then we pour Moscato into that, and then it sort of tempers, but it also makes it a more dynamic pairing for the dish.
That is so fun and innovative. I love that. And the noodle bar, you have fun and funky sizes, formats.
Yes, and we got rid of regular size bottles. So actually a friend of mine calls this Biggie Smalls, and we've sort of adopted it. But everything by the glass is poured out of Magnum. Mm-hmm. And actually we're now at the point where almost all of those Magnums are only available at Noodle Bar. The winery's actually bottled them for us. So we have Bodega Chakra from Piero Inciza. He made 2010 Barda and bottled it in Magnum for us. And we have a Selbach Oster. We have a Riesling. We have Domaine Vacheron Sancerre. And then we have a box of wine, the Domaine Le Garignon.
From Wineberry, our friends.
Yes, exactly. From our friends at Wineberry. And then Scarpetta Timido. I don't know if you... It's Bobby Stuckey's wine.
Okay.
Bobby Stuckey and Lachlan Patterson. And it's old vine, Blaufränkisch, which is called Franconia over in Friuli, and Pinot Nero. And it's delicious.
And I'm just loving that you're pouring a Sancerre that it's a really, you know, typically Sancerre is, bought cheap and then marked up because everyone's going to ask for it by name.
Exactly.
But we're going to do a different kind of Sancerre, which is really super high quality Sancerre.
Exactly. Well, and that was the thing. It's like, yes, 100%. You know, there's a lot of Sancerre on the market, and it's, you know, I remember when I was first learning about wine, I didn't know what Sancerre was. I knew it was a drink that tasted like... what it tastes like, you know, with pyrazines and green and fresh. But, you know, so few people outside of the industry know that it is a region, and Sauvignon Blanc is the grape, and there are different farming practices. And so, I think it's sort of like it's pretty common to see a not great Sancerre by the glass almost everywhere, and we figured that we would sort of buck that trend. If we were going to have Sancerre, we were going to make it awesome. We're going to make it from one of the best estates out there and bottle it so that only people could only get it at Noodle Bar, and to not mark it up in the same sort of way.
So better quality and not marked up as much for a wine that, you know, people inevitably come in and ask for Sauvignon Blanc, and you're like, you know what? This is a really high quality one. Yep. Let me blow your mind.
Exactly.
Let me make you sit up a little straighter.
Exactly.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about Robert's creative travel drinking tips.
Yes.
And curious minds want to know, what do two sommeliers serve at their wedding?
Oh my goodness! We were super lucky, and we had a really amazing wedding. It was sort of like right. It was actually right before Lehman fell, so we sort of were right there in that era of celebrating really classic old world wine regions, and we happened to love those very much. So Robert actually organized. Robert's found some really big bottles of Krug, so we had Krug at the wedding, and I got to saber a bottle, and that was really fun.
In
the wedding dress.
That's a
yep.
great look.
It was fun. John Reagan showed me how to do it. He gave a sabering lesson in the park one night after service. He's great. So we had Krug champagne, and then we had, Robert and I both have godsons who live in Burgundy, and so we wanted to celebrate those estates. So we had Domaine Rouleau out of Jeroboam, and then we also had Domaine du Jacques. We had Clos Saint-Denis, which was gorgeous. We had the 2000 vintage, and that was our, like, I would say, like, the one thing where we didn't agree 100%. I wanted the 2001 vintage because I love that vintage in Burgundy, and he loves the 2000 vintage, so they're both great, and I've never had...
How did you guys come to a middle ground or not?
I think we talked through it, and at the end of the day, 2000 was stunning, and every Du Jacques Clos Saint-Denis that I've ever had has always been stunning, and so it worked out just fine.
But normal couples you see, they go, oh, Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay.
Right,
they
right,
don't
right, right.
Do no, that.
We're so lucky. We're so lucky on our wedding. It was really special.
It's so wonderful. How did you two meet? It was kind of a fun, like, where you sort of had a dinner that was a friend dinner. Friend dinners are good for non-threatening,
totally
non-dates.
Well, and actually, we met when I was at WD50, which was I was actually technically my second job in New York, or even my third, because I had this weird day job, and then I had a restaurant job.
Was it the crappy fashion job?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jordan, Jordan, since I just have memorized your entire...
it's very impressive.
Jordan went to Haverford.
Yeah.
And studied... English?
English lit and philosophy.
So she writes, too, and then she went and got a crappy fashion job.
Yeah, it was like, you know, the recession of '02, and somebody knew somebody who knew somebody who was like a friend of somebody at Elle, that there was this new thing opening up. And so I ended up like packing a lot of lipsticks, and that was what my day was. I organized this room and sent off lipsticks to places. And I had this nighttime job at a restaurant called Topo, and it closed down. But I was there for several months, and they had this amazing wine cellar. And so I like randomly kept getting promoted from hostess to then I was like manager without any business being a manager, and then I was organizing these wine tastings, and then they offered me a salary that enabled me to not pack lipsticks anymore during the day, and then it was after a few months of that is when WD50 opened, and so I got to open and help open that restaurant, and Robert came in.
What was your role at WD50?
It was hostess and reservationist.
Okay.
And I remember thinking, like, okay, this is sort of crazy that I'm like going this direction and taking this hostess job, but it felt right, as weird as that sounds, and I felt like it would lead to something, and I didn't know what, and I knew that for all sorts of reasons it was a really bad idea to, like, right out of college take a hostess job at this restaurant, but I met Wiley Dufresne, and he's so cerebral, and he's so smart, and he's so passionate, and he was, you know, I used to go and, like, spend time in the kitchen, and he had this Michel Bra cookbook, and he would just be there with the cooks, and he was so inclusive, and he was extremely fond of curiosity, and so he really encouraged it, and it was through that moment in time that that I really fell in love with the industry and knew that this was the industry that I, if I could be so lucky, that I wanted to be part of.
So you were at the hostess stand.
Yeah.
Robert came in,
and I was reading a book, and we don't agree on what the book was. I think it was Don DeLillo, White Noise, but he thinks it was a different book. Anyway, I got to know him then, and he invited me to go to the James Beard Awards.
Mm.
And it was, like, very much of a casual friend thing, and, you know, hey, I'm going with some friends, but Crew. So he was one of the owners of a restaurant called Crew, and Crew had been nominated for an award for, I think, Best New Restaurant that year. And so so I went with him and met Paul Greco, actually. No, I saw Paul Greco because the restaurant that used to be called Topo closed, and then it became Hearth. So I met Paul when he and Marco came restaurant shopping for the space that is now Hearth.
Wow.
So I got to see Paul again that night. But it was just, you know, it's such a dynamic industry, and it was really amazing to see this sort of community in action. And then Robert and I went out to dinner with Paul and Paul's wife, Katie, mm-hmm. who's amazing, and a big group of people. And then after that, we went out. Where did we go? That was all at the Mermaid Inn. And then we went for a beer at DBA, and that was, like, the first time that we had, like, a sit-down conversation.
The two of you?
The two of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the pivotal dinner was...
A pivotal dinner was years later, actually. Yeah, because I moved away. I moved away to Colorado, and I went to culinary school, and I started writing, and then it was when
She wrote the Cheap Beats column for the Denver Post.
I did. It was fun. You have an amazing memory. And then when I was moving back to start cooking at Danielle is when we went to dinner at Lupa. And it was, goodness, we went to dinner at Lupa, and that was like, it was like a 4-hour long dinner. It was like, you know, Lupa is one of these magical places, you know, there's so much history and it just feels so comfortable and so relevant. And actually Robert had helped open Lupa. And I feel like even today, it's still as important as it was right when it opened. But it was also a really fun night because I think it was like the night of the Oscars. So Robert and I had dinner, and then he had to go to an Oscar party. But Mario Batali and Mark Ladner were there at the bar. And so Robert went over to introduce us, and they were in the middle of this really heated argument. And the argument was because Mark Ladner had put Meyer lemon zest into the cacio e pepe recipe, and he had been, like, doing this for a while. And Mario found out about it and was livid. And he was like, how can you possibly do this? This is a classic dish on a classic menu that has my name on it. And Mark's like, look, I made this dish better. Like, we all know that it needed a little something, and, like, I figured out what that was. But anyway, so that argument ended up lasting, like, it was so fascinating that it lasted, like, 4 hours over the course of another dinner and all these things. But it was just, so that was this moment of both knowing that I had fallen in love with Robert, even though not knowing what that meant, and also, like, getting this glimpse of, you know, really how rules are important and how tradition is important, and no matter.
It was one of those magical nights, which we're so lucky to have those.
We are. Yeah. You know, I grew up in, you know, Colorado and never dreamed that that night would exist. And so it was like sort of this very surreal New York pinch yourself moment of like, wow.
Hmm. Other important people in your life. So your grandmother was the inspiration for Belus.
Yes, she was amazing. She is amazing. I believe she's still very much here. She is my dad's mother. She passed away when I was 12. So my dad is the youngest. He's twins. He has a twin sister, and they are the youngest of five. And my grandma, her husband passed away when the twins were 13. And so she went to the Timex factory, and she told them that her husband just passed away. She had five kids, and all of them needed to go to college. And so she needed a man's job with man's wages. She said that, and they gave it to her. So she worked. I think she had weekends off because she would cook, and she would make these amazing meals. And she would just cook and cook and cook for the whole week long, and then she would work all week. And then, so family was always really important to her. It was family and education. Those were her values.
And I remember you mentioned that you couldn't quite believe that your grandma had passed when you heard the news, like as a little girl.
Yeah, no, she was the show. I was 12, and
got the news.
Yeah, I got the news, and I remember like going to the stairs, and I walked to the stairs, and then I laid down on the stairs, and then but I wasn't crying because I was like in complete disbelief, and I was sure that the doctors got it wrong. So you know what, I'm not worried. This is just simply not true, and this is incorrect. And grandma's, I'm sure they're wrong. She's can't possibly be gone.
she sounds amazing. Another influential woman in your life is Tori Burch. And I think it's rad that you, as an entrepreneur, someone who started a wine brand and is making your own wine and selling it, that you put yourself out there and you ask for a coffee.
Well, and I was so lucky, and we ended up next to each other at a dinner party, and she's really an inspirational woman in so many ways, and her foundation is really the thing that was so inspiring to me. I mean, she's obviously an amazing businesswoman and a really kind and really generous person. But then the fact that she would take her success, in fact, one of the things, and I heard her say this recently, always at the very beginning of the business plan, she had wanted to start a foundation. But when she was getting advice from people, so many people told her, no, that's a terrible idea and your business won't work and don't have a foundation. And that was always part of her vision anyway. So she waited until the fashion piece of the business was up and running and successful and then started a foundation right away. But that it empowers women entrepreneurs domestically through microfinance and mentorship. And I had an idea, and I had sort of floated it by her, and then I asked if she would maybe be able to have coffee. And she, you know, I was lucky because she had time that week, and I think she actually gives a good piece of advice, which is which I'm sure will resonate with you, and it's don't underestimate the cold call. Because sometimes people will have time for that call and sometimes they won't. But you cold called, was it Ruth Reichel?
Yep.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah.
So that same sort of like taking a risk and I think following intuition. Like I wouldn't have asked her if I didn't feel like, I didn't want to waste her time, obviously. And just like, you know, when you feel like something is the right connection, you can take a risk and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. But Wayne Gretzky has a great saying, which is 100% of the shots you don't take don't go in.
I try to be braver and braver and braver every single day. Yeah. But I will mention that I didn't start off so savvy. I did indeed email Stanley O'Neill this the head of Merrill Lynch.
Okay.
When I was an intern there to have coffee. And I remember my fellow interns were admiring, appalled. They were like, how could you do that? That's so weird. You're a monster, but you're really cool too. I had a coffee, but funny enough, probably wasn't a good fit for me to be there because the HR lady pulled me aside the next day and she was like, you did something you shouldn't have done. It was pretty hilarious.
That's so
at the time I felt silly and stupid, but now that I look back on it, I'm like, this is why I am who I am today.
That's awesome.
So really quick, just want you to plug your new Belus.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I mean, I'm hoping that it works out in the way that I want it to, but really excited and really lucky to have we're making just 200 cases, and it's a collaboration with Wells Guthrie over at Copan Wines, our wine cellars. And Wells is somebody I respect so enormously. He's a gentle person. He's such a cerebral and thoughtful person, and I love his wines and have for a really long time. So we are making a wine in the style of Bougie Sardon, which, to my knowledge, has not yet happened in the U.S., so excited about that.
Wow.
We'll see. I mean, we don't know if it's going to work out or not, but I think it's going to be good. So it's method ancestral, secondary, or really one fermentation that finishes in the bottle. It's rosé. It's a little bit off dry. It's such, like, anyone who has not tried Bougie Sardon, go and buy a bottle of Patrick Botex. And he makes one wine, and it's called La Cuille, L-A, and then C-E-U-I-L-L-E, or C-U-E-I-L-L-E. And that's this name of this tiny little hamlet where he lives, and I went to go visit him, and the town used to have 1,000 people before World War II, and now it has 30. There are literally 30 people who live in this town, and it's at the base of the Alps, and it's so serene and beautiful, and he's gentle and charming, and his wines are amazing.
Awesome. And, you know, part of the reason I want to mention why Jordan and I got to know each other quite in depth is that we did a live stream recently at General Assembly. So this was more of a personal catch up. But if you like the business stuff, look it up. It's called Three Lessons in Brand Building, a conversation with wine entrepreneurs Jordan Salcido and Leyte Su on YouTube. They recorded it. So I also just tweeted the link a couple tweets back at Leyte Su, and we just have a teeny bit of time left. Let's wind it down with Paul Greco. With Paul Greco. He's sommelier and creator of Hearth Restaurant and Terroir Wine Bars, and Rosemary Gray of Flatiron Wines, fine wine buyer and founder of Sherry Fest. We're going to help Rosemary help Paul find a bottle for dinner that night.
I'm at Flatiron Wines with Rosemary Gray, wine consultant, and you can also find her here on the floor. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, lady.
So, Paul Greco just walked in, my former boss, and it's kind of, we're having a little bit of fun because what did he just ask for?
He just asked for a $30 bottle of red for dinner tonight to go with steak.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to make him drink Cab Franc, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Probably from Catherine and Pierre Breton, because I just recently had a very old bottle of it that was delicious from 76. But the 2010 vintage is really pretty, and I'm going to hit him right at about the $30 mark with the Beaumont from Chinon.
Great.
Perfect with steak.
And describe
do you
to
know
me,
this
madame.
Wine? Do you know this wine?
No, but can we have a real interaction here? Come on, friends.
I just had the 76 of this, and it was really pretty. So,
well, aren't you very posh?
I think that I.
Come on, Rosemary, tell me about the goddamn wine. What is going to be my steak?
It's Cabernet Franc. And it's going to have good structure, a little bit spicy, you know, good concentration. 2010 is good vintage.
Good terroir expression, because I need terroir expression. Right? That makes my soul.
I'm pretty sure you can rely on Catherine and Pierre Breton to have very good terroir expression.
Rock on. I think it's going to be an awesome steak.
I think
wine.
It's going to be perfect.
We will know its measure of greatness by the fact that the bottle will be empty by the end of the meal.
And that's your son is having some. Are you having some of this wine?
Do you have a red wine that you prefer, Linus?
I don't even know what that is.
Linus, what kind of wine do you like?
I don't know.
Do you have a Chianti, a Barolo, a Bordeaux? A little less structure, but...
I like non-alcoholic wine. I like
Paul, can you tell me what you came in here today looking for?
I came in here today to teach my son about wine. He's not rising to the challenge. This is a great disappointment to me that at school in fifth grade he's not learning the difference between a German and an Austrian Riesling. Like, if there's anything that's going to get you through life, it's that difference, that understanding of things. But there is still some hope out there. I wanted to help choose a red wine to go with our steak dinner. He had one or two ideas, not fully fleshed out. But there's, again, more days ahead that we can teach him this this world, this life of ours.
And what was your price range?
I think $30, and while retailers may not jump at that, I think $30 is a good price for me when I'm out buying my own juice, that I'm going to get what I would love in a wine. I want balance, I want acid, versatility. And the knowledge that I'm going to be able to finish the bottle of wine.
Okay, so...
My wife may have a glass, but I need to be able to finish the bottle of wine.
All right, so for curious minds out there, if you have many, many yummy, yummy wine bars of your own, and...
If I had some wine bars.
Why don't you just get that wine from your wine bars?
Because I want to see what retailers are doing.
Ah, okay.
They have the same...
Say hi to me.
Yes, I need to see Rosemary once a week. My doctor recommended it. And we're trying to tell stories in our restaurant and in the wine bars, and retailers are trying to do the same thing. So I want to see what my peers, my mates, are doing out in their venues.
Retailers are moving more wine, doing more dollars, and making more change than maybe the world realizes.
I can't speak to that. What I know is that we as sommeliers and beverage directors are not the only gatekeepers for wine. The retailers are equally gatekeepers, and together we can all move this conversation of Riesling forward. You have a younger generation of people opening up wine shops and guiding those programs. It's not just the old school carriage trade stuff, be it in the restaurant or the retail sector. So we're all doing this together.
Awesome, thank you.
Pleasure, dear.
This is Word of Mouth with Leyte Su at heritageradionetwork.org. Next week in the studio, we'll talk to Matt Gross, editor of Bon Appetit and former frugal traveler writer for the New York Times. We'll talk about his new book, The Turk Who Loved Apples. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.